Greetings, salutations, and welcome to the Planestalkers Podcast, the show by casuals for casuals. I am your host, Will Benson, joined as always by my ever-winning, ever-going, now a 12-0 with Esper goddamn control, Aramis Perez. How are you, buddy?
Can't stop, won't stop.
Can you a little? Because it's now getting annoying.
No, the train is moving, man. It's like that deck is the juggernaut, bitch.
You've been playing it very well, and you've been sideboarding it well. Like, I mean, in fact, we might as well just get right into it. Untap, keep and draw. So, you know, yeah, Friday Night Magic, man. We had a night. Mm-hmm. We did all right. Well, you obviously went 12-0.
Yeah, 4-0 again. This is the third.
Or 4-0, yeah.
We've gone three times over the last 6 weeks. We go every other week to FNM. This is the third time I've brought Esper Control. It's the third time I've gone 4-0 and finished in first place. So it's been the heck of a ride. I don't think I've ever had a streak like this, even in FNM, with a deck just being as consistent as it's been.
Yeah, I was really, you know what, even I was impressed with how well I did with it. I also brought it, so, but I mean, yeah, you've had a great, it's not just a great run of cards, don't get me wrong, you've gotten when you need to get,
yeah.
But it's been, you know, one of those really, really all-time pretty good, you know, things there.
Yeah, so. It's been amazing, so I'm a little sad. In one respect, that I'm not going to play this version of the deck again in a tournament because War of the Spark rotates in next week. So
yeah, and we're not playing Friday night. So I mean, we're going to be at the store Saturday.
Yeah, but I mean,
we're going to be playing pre-release.
The following Friday night, I believe, is when War becomes legal. So
right, which means Standard's going to churn on its ear.
Yeah,
I mean, it's going to be what? It'll be a couple of weeks before it shakes itself out. I mean. There's not going to be a real big event for War of the Spark Standard for another, a couple of weeks? I mean, there'll be some MTGO stuff.
Well, it's the release weekend, I believe, or the pre-release. Is it the pre-release? Whatever weekend that GP London is.
Pre-release is GP London, but they're doing sealed with War
of
the Spark.
Okay.
So they're not doing any sort of Constructed. Constructed's actually Modern, where they're doing the test of the London...
The London Mulligan.
The London... Yeah, the London Mulligan, which everybody's looking forward to. And look at this. Pamela Perez is shaking and waving her hand at us. I hope it's a hi and not a, you know, for crying out loud, Will, will you start this podcast on time so my husband can come watch TV with me? So
nothing on tonight.
Oh, good, good. That's the same here. Game of Thrones was last night. Yeah, seriously, if we recorded on Sunday nights, we wouldn't be recording on Sunday nights. So, no, we had a... Yeah, Friday was. I had a night, man. I'll go into me first because it's a more interesting story. Because you're just gonna say, "Yeah, I won four times," but well, it was weird. Game one, I was kind of disappointed. I got ready to play, and I mean, I had the deck tuned, and I managed to pick up some of the cards I needed. I got I needed a few of the more of not the the check lands.
Yeah,
I did need a few of the check lands, so I picked those up, and then. I was getting ready to play, and I was all ready.
You were seated at table one, too, right, to start the tournament?
Yeah, I was like, and the dude never showed. Like, I guess they dropped before they dropped, before they started.
I don't understand that, because, I mean, you don't get anything besides a promo card just for signing up. I mean, unless maybe it was like, so it had to have been some kind of an emergency, and he had to go.
Yeah, because it was him and his brother. Like, the other guy, there were two guys that didn't show up for that first round, and they both had the same last name.
Huh. Okay, yeah, it had to have been something that happened then. That's weird.
Oh, this is awful. Oh, wow.
Uh-oh.
Oh, this is horrible. Oh.
Hey, both?
Oh, I'm having a really bad beer. Wow, that's very hoppy. Okay.
Maybe we stay on the rails this time.
Yeah, we might stay on the rails this week. Hey, you left. You left the broadcast. I didn't do that. I swear to God, I didn't do that. Are you back?
I'm still here.
Yeah, we might stay on the rails this time, if you can keep yourself in the podcast.
Okay.
So, he didn't show up. So, I mean, I basically got to buy the first round, which was okay. I walked around and spent a little money. Again, let's not tell Wendy. And then I basically had game two was a little different. Yeah.
What? I
don't know how to talk about game two.
I watched some of that match. You ended up going to time, right?
Yeah, we basically, I was playing this in Phoenix. So he was doing really, you know, for game one, the reason I went to time was, I mean, I was just, I got every card I needed to remove. He put something out, I remove it. Put something out, I remove it. I managed to exile using Kaya because I put two in the deck, which, you know, turned out, for me, was a smart idea because he got rid of one. But I managed to exile Phoenix every time he got it into his graveyard. So that was good. Game two, I mana screwed myself, and so I was like, and it went quick. I mean, you know, basically once I knew we were going to lose, I'm like, well, let's just get to game three.
Well, no, I remember that one. Game two, he resolved Niv-Mizzet against you.
Yeah, he did.
And I think
and I was like, he
missed.
I don't want to deal with this.
I mean, it ended up. From what I saw, it was back and forth. You kind of were somewhat in control. I think the mistake that you made was that
you used Kaya's wrath
the turn too early. All he had on the board was a Goblin Electromancer, and you were at like 16 life, and he had hit you a couple times.
Yeah,
and I think I understand why you made that play, because you're figuring, well, I mean, the Electromancer, he's going to start rattling off all these spells a little bit cheaper. He'll probably get a Phoenix in the graveyard and start hitting me with it, so I better deal with it now. Unfortunately, he drew two Phoenixes the next turn and cast a bunch of spells and proceeded to bash your face in with it, but then you killed one Phoenix.
And
then he cast
out
Niv-Mizzet. He actually did, I mean, it didn't matter, but he did miss a trigger with Niv, but...
Yeah, I caught that too. On the beginning of his turn, he did.
Yeah, because he cast Radical Idea and he forgot to draw the extra card and do the extra damage, but it ended up not mattering.
Right.
You know, you untap with Niv, you should win the game.
And that was it. So we took it to game three. Yeah. And I think we started at turns. And
yeah, you started with like literally 35 seconds left on the clock.
I was doing all right though. Yeah. Like I was like, I had the right hands and the right. I felt good about that game. You know, it Phoenix can be tough.
I think if that game hadn't gone to time, you might have won that match.
Yeah, I would have. And then because he was missing some plays. He I get the feeling he had bought the deck, like the Challenger deck that day. A lot of the cards he had in it. And then I think he went and got some extra Phoenixes.
I think I remember him saying that he'd only just recently started playing the deck, so he didn't really know all the interactions yet.
Right. And so I think he said, I got the Challenger deck, and then I think he just did. Because Phoenix's price has come down thanks to, you know, it finally not being unbeatable.
Well, and also because the Challenger deck now it's actually kind of available.
Right. So, you know, game two, or so my game two, game three, though... Dimir, and it was just bad run of cards, man. There wasn't much I could do. I flooded game one, like, a lot. And then game two, he just got everything out lickety-quick.
Yeah.
And he was just going to town. I didn't sideboard enough stuff out. We talked about it afterwards. I probably should have maybe sideboarded out some of my control, kept one or two of the board wipes in. And what I did was I sideboarded more Negate and the Duresses, and only two, or I had all four of Thief of Sanity. But I had no idea what to unmoor Ego, so I didn't take those out. I didn't put Lyra in. And I basically just, you know, I didn't take out, like, I kept Mortifies and Cast Downs, and I was like, looking back, I was like, you know what, I could have took a few Cast Downs out and really just had some quicker interaction on the outside, but what are you going to do? Game four was White Aggro, and I managed to wipe him when I needed to wipe both games. So, what about you? How'd you do?
Well, the first match I played against someone playing Is It Drakes, theirs was a little different. They were main decking Rawl. So I'm not sure if it was really Drakes or Phoenix or what it was. Might have been more like Drakes. And I'm trying to remember exactly what ended up happening. I think I kept tucking his Rawl, and eventually was able to stick it to Fairy, and I was getting close to ultimate, and he knew the writing was on the wall. I had a bunch of counter spells in my hand, and he just said, "Let's go to game two," because he could feel that it was coming, that I was taking control of the game. The second game, he boarded in Sorcerer's Spyglass, which I honestly had forgotten about this card, and I had boarded in hostage taker to take his Niv-Mizzets and his Drakes, you know, because it's like, hey, they could be finishers for me. He plays the Sorcerer's Spyglass. I'm like, oh, that's right. Hostage taker can take artifacts. So I stole his Sorcerer's Spyglass, recast it, named Rawl. And from there, just he's like, okay, scooped him up.
Yeah.
The next three rounds, I played mono white each round. And it's a tough matchup. Two of them I lost game one convincingly. He just they would get a good enough draw early history Benalias and multiple Odonto Vanguards, and I did either didn't see my board wipes or whatever, and it just took a ton of damage and died. But in each of the games two and three, two of the matches against mono white went to three games. The other one was just two games. I was able to draw a lot of removal early. Cry of the Carnarian was a huge, huge all-star for me that day. Because Odonto Vanguard's awesome, but Indestructible doesn't work against that. So I was able to exile a bunch of creatures. And it feels good when you have a 3-mana spell be like a 6-for-1.
Yeah.
So
Cry of the Carnarian is kind of anti-white aggro.
Yeah, white aggro, red aggro. It's really good against them. I boarded in like my Moment of Cravings. I actually boarded out the Thought Erasures against them because...
You were telling me
about
that. Yeah,
because I figured, all right, this deck empties its hand pretty quickly. After maybe turn two or three, Thought Erasure is going to be kind of a dead card because the only thing they're going to be keeping in their hand is probably going to be like a Conclave Tribunal, which I can remove with Mortify or counter it.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually did end up in, I think it was the fourth round, They Conclave Tribunaled my Teferi, and then I played a Thief of Sanity, and they Conclave Tribunaled that. No, they Conclave Tribunaled my Hostage Taker, and then I played a Thief of Sanity, got a Conclave Tribunal off of it, Conclave Tribunaled their Conclave Tribunal to steal their Loxodon Hierarch, and yeah, it was downhill real quick from there.
Yeah, the deck Chris was playing, which is basically the Challenger decks. Mm-hmm. I bought two Challenger decks for the club, which when I say for the club, I tell them these are mine, but they're for you guys to use.
Right.
But God forbid I leave, I'm taking them with me. They're not the club's. And basically was like, so it doesn't have the Venerated Loxodon. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have the things, and I offered, I'm like, listen, I've got a mono white deck. I can throw you some of the Venerated Loxodon so you can, nope, I'm good. I'm like, okay. Venerated Loxodon, is like the winner in that deck. Yeah, you need four of those.
It's one of those cards that it's if you go on curve, especially, it's backbreaking because you're like turn one Vanguard, turn two, or turn one we'll say
Sky Marcher.
Not even Sky Marcher. It could be what the heck's it called?
Dauntless?
The enchantment that makes the token.
Oh, Legion's Landing.
Thank you. My brain just shut off. turn one Legion's Landing. Turn two Vanguard. Either turn two Vanguard or turn two. Snubhorn plus Sky Marcher, and then turn three,
right.
You're dropping either a History of Benalia. Yeah, you're probably dropping History of Benalia and then convoking out a Loxodon, and all of a sudden these guys are all huge. You plop down a Benelish Marshal, and then that's the game.
Yep. And that's just it. I'm like, you really need these Loxodons, but he didn't. And, he was doing all right. I think he went 2-2 because he almost had you.
No, actually, with his, and he was the only one I went 2-0 against. He was
okay.
He was up, I believe, one of the games briefly. No, I had turn four Wrath against him. And then and that wiped his board, and in game two, he started beating me down. I stabilized. We weren't really doing much of anything either way for a couple turns, and then Lyra showed up.
Oh,
so I mean, at that point, he didn't have the Conclave Tribunals to deal with Lyra, so she just took over.
Yeah, he sideboarded those out a lot. When I played him, he did the same thing. And I mean, he thought he had me game one. He had me down on game one. He had me down pretty good. And then I just came back. That's the thing I like about Esper Control is that even if you're having a rough go the first game or two, you can be 15 points down and still win because you stabilize.
Yeah.
Like it happened, the Izzet Phoenix guy, it happened. He did have me down, up and down that whole first game. And then I started stabilizing, and then it's like, I'm taking your phoenix. I'm going to take this phoenix. I'm going to take this out of your graveyard, and now this one. And, you know, and then I'm Kaya's Wrathing for the – I think I had Kaya up to – or not Kaya's Wrathing. I had Kaya up to, like, 15. And I'm just like, okay, I'm going to start hitting you now. And he's like, all right, let's go to game two. I'm like
– yeah, I mean, there's a lot of times where when an Esper deck takes over and establishes control, they might be at one life. You know, or three life, five life, you know, a perilously low life total. And if you're not playing mono red, you lose.
Yep. And it was a lot of fun. So I really enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to, you know, I mean, I'm only going to be, I mean, starting here, I mean, I've got the wedding coming in July. Yeah, odds are good. It's going to go to once a month if I can get out there. All right, it'll go to every other week still, but we're not going to tell Wendy. It's just going to kind of sort of happen. But, you know, because I love going there. And, you know, and especially given what's going on Saturday, you know, and we're going there Saturday. As we announced last week, you know, big announcement again time in case you missed it. It was at the end of the podcast. We will be at Kerwin's Saturday morning for their pre-release. They're not doing a midnight pre-release. They're only doing Saturday during the day. So they're doing it at 1 at 10, 1 at 2, and 1 at 6. The 10 o'clock one, we're going to actually be there and play and just be contestants. But the 2 o'clock one, we're going to actually do a live Twitch and YouTube and Facebook, because I'm going to use OBS and Restream. And basically, we're going to be live on hopefully on all of our various media, live streaming and live calling. I'm not sure if we're going to be commentating or not, but at the very least, we're going to be live podcasting the War of the Spark pre-release. It'll be a two-headed giant event that they do for second round. So we're going tomorrow. Aramis and I are going to be at the store kind of looking over things, seeing if there's any way. I would love if we could find some way to get a live monitor in another room. Mm-hmm. And have us call it.
That would be great.
Like, I'd love to sit there and you know, I'll be Jim Nance, you can be Boomer Esiason, Phil Sims.
Tony Romo now, actually, don't forget.
No, you're not going, you can't pull off Romo. Sims, maybe. You're lucky I didn't go, you know, Pat Summerall and John Madden. But
says the guy who went 2-1-1, I'm just saying.
Yeah, I'm awesome. But, yeah, my 2-1-1 was a legitimate 2-1-1, sir. You cheat.
No, you weren't supposed to tell anybody that. Jeez, not great. Now the DCI is going to come take my number. Thanks, buddy.
You're welcome. Merry Christmas. But no, so we're going to be there Saturday during the 2 o'clock. I don't know if we're going to be there the whole 4 hours that they're doing round two. We may just podcast for a couple hours. If we're calling it, obviously we're going to hang.
Yeah.
But if it's just a live podcast, we may just do a 2-hour podcast and then, you know, whatever. But we're going to figure things out as we go. But we'd love to see you. If you're from the Capital Region, which is the Albany area of New York State, we'd love to have you guys there. We'll be at Kerwin's Game Store in Catskill, New York. We, like I said, we're going to be playing at 10 o'clock, so don't come then. But feel free to come. No, I'm kidding. But we'll be there at 10 o'clock playing as contestants, and then at 2 o'clock we're going to just go live. It's going to be a really exciting time. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what shape it's going to take because we haven't seen any of the equipment, and we haven't. Neither Aramis nor I have ever tried to do this before, so there could be technical gaffes galore.
Oh, yes. This is going to be fun.
It's going to be really a good time. I'm really. There'll be interviews with some of the staff there. We may even interview some of the players. You know, we're just going to have a good old time celebrating the pre-release of War of the Spark. You know, I could see him and I going through our pre-release packs and being like, okay, this is what I was thinking when I was playing. And, you know, we're just going to have a really, really, it's going to be a lot of fun. So, again, Kerwin's Game Store in Catskill. You'll also find us at the very least. Now, we may not be able to Facebook Live it because Restream wants me to be quite honest, I'm not going to lie, Restream wants me to pay to broadcast to my page. Or I can broadcast to my Facebook for free. So it might be on my Will Benson Facebook, but it will definitely be on our YouTube, and it will definitely be on our Twitch. Mm-hmm. So
I can't wait.
We're hoping to see I can't either. So, and you know, we'll be live tweeting and all sorts of stuff, and it's going to be a really, really good time. If we get to call it, it's just going to be cool hearing you go off and, you know, on what they should have done. I personally can't wait for that. I really hope we get to call some of the games. So, but yeah, I mean, Aramis, what are you thinking about this? Like, what do you want to see happen this weekend? What are you hoping for?
I'm hoping to open crazy bombs when I'm playing the tournament. I mean, obviously. I'm
talking about the podcast. We're all hoping to open bombs. I mean, what? This is no, that's no secret.
I just, you know, if we get a chance to call games, I think that'll be awesome. But even if we just get a chance to broadcast and just show people enjoying the game, you know, enjoying this set, which I think is, I mean, we've been saying this for the last few sets, but I think this is the most anticipated set in a long time, if not the most anticipated set since the original game came out. I mean, because it's just the power level of the cards, the story behind it, all these little loose ends being wrapped up, and it's very well put together set, and the whole weekend is going to be great. I'm really looking forward to being able to share it with our viewers, and you know, just play Magic. That's what it's all about.
Absolutely, and I'm looking forward to it too. I'm looking forward to opening the pre-release. I mean, I got to be honest, I'm kind of looking forward to having six packs of generic, not guild based, not worrying that I'm going to have a, you know, that I chose poorly, and that yes, while I have great cards for a Gruul deck, I opened Azorius through the rest of the packs. Mm-hmm. Like I'm really looking forward to the sealed aspect of this. And in fact, I think we should just go ahead and get right into
main phase.
Get right into our main phase, because what we're going to talk about is the same thing we talked about. You know what? In our first episode, period. Or it might have been our second.
No, it was number one, I think.
I think it was two, actually. Oh, no, because there was zero. Zero. Yeah, it was number one, but zero, we did a zero episode, remember? Mm-hmm. Like the test episode.
And I was trying to forget
one
that.
Was,
but...
Yeah, let's never ever discuss that again. that's a pop, 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 yeah. Pop. And, but with that, and I just did a pop on my own lips. With that, I want to kind of go over some tips, and I'm gonna, you know, draw the curtain back here and be completely honest. I've been a full time bonus dad for the last 2 weeks. Like, we've had kids, their dad's been in the hospital, so we have had the kids here at the house since last like two Fridays ago.
Right.
So I'm gonna be quite honest with you, and I mean, prep aside, I have my finger on some of the pulse, but when it comes to this entire set and really being ready for pre-release, I got to be honest, I'm not. So this is kind of great because we are the podcast for casuals by casuals for casuals. So I get to be the casual, and Aramis can give as much advice to me as he wants about ways we should, what cards we really should be looking for, you know, pre-release. If we're opening our six packs and we open this particular card, this would be something you might want to think about building around and what you might want to have with it. So, and of course I'm going to help because I do have some info, but Aramis,
yes.
What do you think? Obviously, if you open Nicol Bolas, you're playing Nicol Bolas.
Not necessarily.
Really?
Here's the thing. And we talked about this. Sorry. We talked about this for the Ravnica Allegiance pre-release. Obviously, when you open your packs, look at your rares and mythics, see what you've got. If you've got crazy good stuff, try to build in those colors. Make sure you have the cards to support those colors.
Yes.
One of the problems with Nicol Bolas, yes, he's probably the most powerful card in the set. He's probably like an insane bomb. You play him, you should probably win most of your games. He's Grixis, but he's heavy black. And there are no dual lands in this set. There is no mana fixing really in this set as far as lands are concerned. There's artifact mana and stuff in green, but if you're playing Grixis, you don't have access to green. So the hard part is going to be finding your rares and hoping that you have enough support in your colors to play those rares. With Nicol Bolas, it'll be difficult, but I mean, black is very good in this set.
Black is
very good. Red is very good. Blue's got some good stuff as well. So I mean, it shouldn't be terribly hard if you open up, you know, the Dragon God to, you know, serve behind your Lord and Master of Dragons. But a lot of the myth, like a lot of the rares and mythics in this set are all are very good. There are very few, if any, dud rares. Like if you open God Eternal Oketra, play white if you can at all. This card is bonkers in limited.
Yes, you are not wrong.
I mean, just for the 3/6 double strike body, that in and of itself is really good. And then anytime you cast a creature spell, you get a 4/4 black zombie warrior creature with vigilance. I mean, come on. You cast a random 1/1, there's a 4/4 with vigilance sitting next to it just for free. Okay. And then the God Eternal doesn't, you know, none of the God Eternals die. They all go back into your library so they can come back. So it's, you know, it's pay attention to the rares you open. If you open Niv-Mizzet, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to be able to make 5-color work. It's just, it's not going to happen with a limited format. He's a cute card for my commander, but he's not going to work in a limited environment. Something like Roalesque Apex Hybrid is going to be great. You're going to want to be Simic for that. If you open Liliana, you are black. Because
I agree.
Stupid.
If you open God Eternal Kefnet, you better go blue if you can. Mostly blue.
I don't know if he's as good in limited, though, because
there's not a lot of instants.
Not as many instants. And just you're not going to hit as often. He's a great for 4/5 flyer. Still a really good creature. If you get him, play him. But he's not on the same level as Oketra. He's not on the same level as Ilharg, or even
Ilharg was going to be my next one. I was like, if I open Ilharg, I'm going red.
There's other cards you can get that are better than Kefnet. If you open Awakening of Vitugazi, that's an incredibly good card. I mean, there's not going to be a lot that's going to be able to deal with a 9/9 at instant speed. So just keep an eye on what you open. Build based off of that. I mean, you want to have a good mix of speech of creatures and spells and lands. You generally want 17 lands, 23 non-land cards. You can get away with 16 or 18 lands depending on whether your deck is more controlling or if it's like really, if you get a lot of low cost stuff and it's really fast, you might be able to get away with 16 lands. Maybe something like a black red aggro deck. Maybe you open a Dreadhorde Butcher and a Dreadhorde Invasion. You know, you get really lucky and you can do a bunch of eternal zombie nonsense. In that case, you might be able to get away with fewer lands. But for the most part, 17 lands is the benchmark. You want about 15 to 18 creatures and the remainder to be spells. You want your spells to generally be removal or card draw.
Exactly.
Creature enchantments, I mean, there's a lot of removal in this set. So play creature enchantments at your own peril. If you have a way to...
Is there a lot of enchantments in this set, though? I've been looking through this and it's like I think there's one or two, but it's very very because it's almost like they treat the uncommon planeswalkers, and we said this before, as an enchantment,
right?
But one that you could hit.
But I'm talking about like auras, you know.
Okay, that's true. I mean, do we have many of those?
I don't think there's a ton. There's not a ton. There's only a few. There's no equipment in this set, so keep that in mind. There's vehicles, but there's no equipment. I think this is only.
Yeah,
like
I thought that was a little strange too.
I think it's only like the second or third set since they've introduced equipment where there isn't any. But that's not necessarily a bad thing. It just means that Nahiri's static ability is kind of pointless.
Kaya's ghost form. That's an aura.
Yeah, there's not a ton, but like I said, you know, the removal in this set is very, very good. So
yes,
keep an eye out for that. It's generally going to be in black and red. There's lots and lots of good stuff in those colors. Black white's got some good stuff. Black blue's got some good stuff. It seems like the Grixis colors, Nicol Bolas's colors, really got a lot of really nice toys. But white and green didn't get left out at all. So you're able to play. They really made it so that you can play any 2-color combination that you want. 3 colors and more is not really going to be a thing.
Not in limited because you don't have the mana base.
Right. The fixing's not generally there. But like I said, if you're playing main Rakdos and you splash just a smidge of blue, you can get away with it if you have, again, if you have something crazy like Nicol Bolas. But for the most part, you're going to want to be 2 colors. If you're splashing a third, it should be 1 card that maybe costs 1 mana of that type, so that way it doesn't hurt the rest of your mana base and your consistency.
In other words, if you're going to splash for Nicol Bolas, make sure that the color you're splashing isn't black.
Yeah.
Like, a splash of red or a blue, do not splash, because black requires 3. Like, that's not, you know, then go black and a little red with a splash of blue.
Yeah.
And even then, and realize, you may sit with him for quite some time until you get your blue mana. Mm-hmm.
You're probably...
It's definitely...
And you're probably going to... be playing somewhere in the neighborhood of 2 to 3 or 4 planeswalkers.
In
your deck, it's possible. It's not likely. You know, it's not guaranteed though, because I'm gonna do a shout out to this site. I found this great site. It's called DraftSim.com. They allow you to do fake sealed decks and drafts. So I've done a couple of sample card pools with War of the Spark. I don't think they have the collation down as far as the rares are concerned.
Sorry.
I don't think they have it down to where like an actual print runs are concerned. So you're not going to get exactly what it is. So there were a lot of ones where I got like, you know, double of the same rare. That's not necessarily going to happen at a pre-release, but it's shown me that, you know, every pack's going to have one planeswalker. It's possible to get two if you get a foil. So you're going to have 6 planeswalkers minimum.
Yes.
If they're in your colors, most of them are playable.
Well, here's the thing. I don't see how, though, doing math here, given the amount of uncommons and commons and rares, and I won't be surprised to see, they said you'll get at least one planeswalker. I don't see how, with the math here, that they cannot have, you know, I would say in these 6 packs, I'll be very surprised if at least 2 packs don't have an uncommon and a rare planeswalker.
I think the way it's sort of like how they did it with Dominaria, where every pack had one legend.
Right.
So they're able to manipulate.
But I got a bunch with 2 legendaries in it.
Like, yeah, but it's not going to be something that happens all the time. They're able to set the print run however they want to ensure that you're not getting 2 or 3 planeswalkers in a pack. So if you get one in your uncommon slot, you're not going to see it in your rare and mythic slot. So you're going to see 6 planeswalkers basically as your baseline. You may get a 7th if you're lucky enough to pull a foil, but you're pretty much going to have 6. You may not even have 6. You may have 5.
I opened when it was Dominaria. I did. My old game store used to do, like, you could buy all 3 because they had 3 events. Mm-hmm. Buy all 3 for $60 or $50, so I would do that even if I didn't play. Mm-hmm. And all 3 of the ones I opened, they were always legendary, like legendary. The promo card was a legendary. So, like either a saga or, and I think it was rare or higher. I will be very surprised.
Well, that is actually, now that you think, now you say, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I think I remember them saying that you're going to get 1 or 2 promo cards. And I believe
one is always a legendary and one is like a normal.
Yeah, I think one of them is going to be a planeswalker.
That's what I heard.
If that's the case, then you'll have 7 planeswalkers, possibly 8. But still, you know, it's going to be, make sure you have the support for the colors for the cards you want to play. There's a possibility you may not play any of your rares or mythics because it just doesn't fit your colors. That's unfortunate if it happens that way, but that's the devil in the details when it comes to sealed deck.
Right.
There's no guarantee that you're going to use your promo card at all. So, I mean, because I remember in Dominaria, my promos were Tempest Djinn and the elf legend that gets bigger if there's more elves in play, and I was like, yeah, I'm not playing either of these. Nobody knew how good Tempest Djinn was at the time, but also too, a lot of people weren't playing mono blue. So and I think Marwyn that was her name? That card wasn't that great for sealed. So I think I'm trying to remember. Yeah, because also, too, in Guild of Ravnica, I opened the Dimir pack. I didn't know how good Blood Operative was, and I didn't play it, and I should have. I didn't put it in my deck. I had a good Dimir deck, but I wasn't able to play the promo card because I didn't think it was very good, but in hindsight, it actually ended up being fairly decent.
Oh, John's leaving. Ah.
Bye, John.
Bye, John.
Get home safe.
Yeah, we'll read your email later, so make sure you tune in. So. But, yeah, you know, it. Yeah, Merwin was, I think I got sagas for 2 of them in Dominaria. That was what was really weird. And they were Song of Freelies for 2 of them out of the 3.
That's not bad, actually.
The other one was Eldest Reborn, and I was like, I like that.
Yeah, that's
what I did use.
I was going to say, hopefully that made it to your deck.
Oh, yes, it did.
Good.
I mean, you know, when I think about this set, though, I mean, I'm really looking forward to Saturday and really trying to figure it out, but I mean, obviously, yes, you're right. If you open, where is he there? Ilzog?
Oh, Ilharg the Razebore? Yeah.
Ilharg, you have to play him.
If you can.
Find
it.
He's too red. Find a way. He's, oh my God, in Limited, he's just he's broken.
Well, you remember that time we were playing Rivals of Ixalan? I pulled that Rekindling Phoenix, and I was like, my red sucks, but I'm finding a way to make it work. And I did.
And it worked.
Because, I mean, well, Rekindling Phoenix, I mean, yeah, these guys are on that level in Limited, where it's like, you cast one of these gods, you better friggin' win that game, because these things are impossible to deal with in Limited.
Right.
Because they're just going to come back. You don't care if they die. Like, give me three turns, it'll be back.
Or put into exile from the battlefield. Ugh.
Yeah, so the only way to stop these things is to counter them, make them discard them, or mill them.
Right. Oof. It's still horrible. they're just... God dang it, they're horrible.
They're beautiful.
Yeah, well, they really are. I mean, you know, I'm saying horrible for if I, you know, have to play against one. But, you know, but yeah, so he's right. You know, just take a look at your deck. Sit down, you know, when you're putting your deck together, do the color thing and take a look and see really what works together. Look for synergy. Look for, you know, the mechanics are pretty straightforward. A mass is kind of an interesting notion. I don't think a mass will see a lot of play in Constructed.
Yeah, I'm not,
however, for I'm Limited,
not sure they pushed it enough. Yeah,
Limited, it's pretty good. The other one, Proliferate, we've seen before, and that does have a lot of potential if you can get a lot of Planeswalkers out.
Yeah.
And again, he's right though. I mean, resist the urge. Even and I'm the worst at this, and he'll tell you this. Like, I will try to crush three colors in because I really want to play. Like, I see the synergy here, and I don't have enough to support it, so mm-hmm. I start having to get, you know, getting like, well, maybe I'll just do this and this and, you know, and this. I like to do combos. Yeah, I got to fight that urge with this set because
I mean, if it's a splashable bomb, you can probably get away with it. I mean, you could probably, if it's your only card in those colors, if you open a Oketra and the rest of your white is garbage, but your black and your red are good, throw a couple of planes in the deck and have at it. You know, hopefully you get some artifact mana fixing or something. Try to find a way to get like three or four white mana sources in the deck to be able to cast her because she's just absolutely bonkers.
She is.
So if it's a situation like that where, you know, this card is like top of the top, like three or four cards in the set for Limited, and whatever color it's in is not that great, if you have a way to make a splash work just for that card, give it a shot. I mean, here's the thing: it's a pre-release. It's not going to be, you know, this isn't the Pro Tour, so it's not a huge deal if you lose. The whole point is to have fun.
Right.
Obviously, winning extra packs is great, and that's what I want to do, and I'd rather do that. But
I'm buying another box.
if it comes down to having a workable deck, or playing the card you want to play because it's just awesome, play the card because it's awesome.
Yeah.
Have fun. That's what it's about in the end. Have fun, and it doesn't really matter if you win or lose during this. It's just it's looking at the new cards, being able to play with them before most other people get to play with them, and maybe getting lucky and cracking a $30 rare.
Yeah, exactly what he said. And, you know, it just makes me think.
Nerd! But why?
I just like saying that. No, I just, you know, when I think about, like, and I'm looking at this set, I'm kind of poking my way through, and it's like it is going to be tough, too, is because one of the other things to think about in regards to this is a lot of the best cards are dual. As far as two black, two white, two blue, two, you know, it's almost like they are really trying to force you to go. Even Niv-Mizzet's freaking Reborn. Like, it's like you can only play dual colored cards. So, and you know, here's the thing. Realize too, okay, you could draw a Guild Gate. They do have all the Guild Gates in this set. You know, those will be valuable to you in that regard. You know, if you have a red and a green and you got the Gruul Guildgate, then
they did
go
not,
to town.
The Guildgates are not in this set.
They are, actually. If I'm looking on this, I see Orzhov Guildgate. I see a Simic Guildgate.
Those are in the Planeswalker decks.
Oh.
Yeah, there's no Guildgates in this. There's no dual-colored lands at all.
Well,
there's the Gateway Plaza.
Beat me on my head and call me Charlie.
Gateway, there is Gateway Plaza, so I mean there,
and
there
and Manageode.
The one. There's it. What else was there?
Manageode.
Well, yeah, but that's an artifact. Those Gale are artifacts.
Globe. Yeah,
they have artifact mana fixing, so you can have a splashable thing. But yeah, most of them are going to be most of the rares and mythics are two pips in whatever color they're in.
Yeah,
but you know, if you open one,
you'll make it work.
You open a Revelation, play it.
Oh, hell yeah. Finale of Revelation?
Any of the finales, really. Finale of Glory. I mean, that's just... That's I win the game right there.
Yeah.
Even if it's just for, like, five. Well, who cares? It's five creatures for seven mana.
All right. So that's our... You know, that's War of the Spark, guys. Just do what you want to do. Play how you want to play. You know, I didn't care if you hung around. I didn't care if you went away. You know, I thought I was being cool. I thought I was being smart. And I'm not singing Mike and Mechanics. This is how it is. But no, we're going to go ahead and get into combat, though, right now. So let's do that.
Combat phase.
Aramis, what do you think? What's our combat today?
Well, I think our combat is we're going to sort of stay in the wheelhouse of War of the Spark. Obviously, the set gets released next weekend. This weekend's just the pre-release. But when it gets released next weekend, it will be legal for Standard. There is a lot of buzz around a lot of cards in this set. It's going to turn Standard on its ear. What do you think is going to be good?
Well, the first answer, everybody's first answer, Grixis. How do you not? I mean, if you're going to archetype more than color, I think control is here to stay.
I think control got
between Grixis and Esper. And to be honest, aggro did not. It looks like aggro in this set did not get a big boost.
Well, that's not necessarily true. There's some the black and red aggro got a pretty good size boost with some of the Dreadhorde stuff.
True.
I think Aristocrats got some nice toys. That I think is that should come a little bit more towards the forefront. Another deck that got some toys is Nexus, believe it or not.
Yeah, Nexus got some.
But that being said, this might be another sort of anticlimactic combat phase. I think I have to agree with you in this respect. Control got the most toys.
It really did.
Control. I mean, between Grixis and Esper, holy crap. I mean,
well, the finales kind of do something crazy in Grixis and Esper. I mean, well, not so much green, but yeah, it's
not even the finales. I mean, in Grixis you have D-Spark, you have Dovin's Veto, you have what else was there? I gotta find it now. Oath of Kaya, you've got Soul
Diviner.
You're
talking Esper.
You've got Teferi. You've got Tyrant Scorn. Esper.
You said Grixis, so you mean Esper.
I meant Esper. Time Wipe. All these guards in Esper. I mean, it's just, it's crazy. Grixis got a ton of toys, too. I mean, Nicol Bolas and friends. I mean, come on. But, God, it's just, Control is just, it's going to be, I think, the top two or three decks in the format. Until core set 2020 comes out, because there's so much there. There are so many removal spells. I mean,
Elder Spell.
Alone. There's Enter the God Eternals. I mean, that's a finisher.
Yes, that is a finisher.
And you think about this too, with the new Teferi, that's now an instant. Doing this on their end step is devastating.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think. Wizards made a mistake
in
printing the new Teferi at 3 mana. I think this was a gigantic mistake. Not ban worthy, because you can still beat it, but it's so good and it's so cheap, and what the heck were they thinking about putting an ability like that on a 3 mana card?
That's why I'm glad I bought 2. Even though I'm getting 2 boxes, I'll have 2 coming in no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those, because I do. I think those are going to be the most valuable, quote unquote, and most usable cards.
Yeah, I mean, you're basically like some of the lists that I've seen for updated Esper lists. It's, you know, four Hero of Dominaria, four two Time Ravelers. So there's six Teferis. So, you know, you curve into this, you're done. There's nothing you can do because you can't do anything.
Exactly.
I mean, maybe this is just the hype talking, but I don't see where a mid-range deck has any sort of legs right now. They're just too slow.
I don't know about that. I think there are things that'll help mid-range. Some of the uncommons, like I'm looking right now even at Arlen, a wolf pack can very easily happen. Because there's enough wolves out there, like I could see a tribal wolf deck, wolf mid-range, doing something. Because it can go wide.
Well, here's the problem. How much does Arlen cost?
Three?
Six.
Four. Six. Oh, shit. Yeah.
Six. That's the problem.
But Arlen's wolf costs, you know, three.
Arlen's wolf costs three, but you, first of all, you need to be on the play. Second of all, if you're on the play, you play their third land, you play Arlen's wolf, they just end step, cast down, turn three Teferi, you're done.
Yeah, but it's already got other mid-range stuff out there. Like, you've got ways to protect it in the other mid-range, you know, with Sultai.
It's
especially
tough. It's going to be really tough because they can play Teferi, minus it, and the next thing you play, okay, you attack with the wolf, even if it survives, you know, they can mortify it, they can draw step, Thought Erasure you, Vraska's Attempt's already an instant, they can instant speed Kaya's Wrath. It's just the amount of things that the new Teferi opens up for a control player to basically never have to play another spell on their turn is
scary. Yeah, that's
scary.
True.
It's so scary. Remember how scared it was of Wilderness Reclamation?
Yes.
I am more scared of this Teferi than I am of Wilderness Reclamation, and I don't think they're going to ban this Teferi, ever.
No. And I don't think they're going to ban... I mean, at this point, though, there are things in here, too, that help Wilderness Rec.
Yeah.
Like, it's obvious to me that they're going somewhere. You know, when they go to Core 2020, it's going to be interesting to see some of the stuff that they're putting in. I mean, but the rotation, I mean, after rotation, it's going to be control. Unless this core set really brings back a lot of the cheap, you know...
Well, I don't know, because core sets are usually the more watered-down sets in Standard. They're the ones that are more for the beginners. To sort of get themselves into the game. So, like you were saying, it's going to be like a palate cleanser because there's no way they're following this up with another powerful set.
But then there's always one or two cards that have some sort of impact. I mean, the Nicol Bolas in Core 19, there was an impact. It wasn't much. It didn't see much play until recently.
But it's coming back.
It is coming back. Really
it's coming
good,
back.
Yeah.
You're gonna see probably 6 to 8 Nicol Bolas in a deck, and it's going to be disgusting.
Yeah,
but again, it's Grixis. It's control.
Control is going to be a thing. There's no doubt there.
Now, me as a control player, I'm giddy. I love this. Now,
I like combo. I mean, for me, I'm a combo guy, and there are various different combos I could see start coming around here.
Oh yeah,
I'd like to see how Nexus goes because with not only that, you can do Nexus now, but with all the legendaries, this brings back Karn's Temporal Sundering into an actual playable card.
Yeah, it does. And also, you can easily slot in Raoul, the new Raoul, into a Team of Reclamation deck and have an infinite combo in your deck that's very easy to pull off.
It's going to be an interesting standard, to be sure. And, I mean, I'm not sure... I mean, let's take a look here. Star City. I mean,
the one thing that I'll say, the one thing that I'll say while you're looking at that is that the one thing this does, not sure if it's a good thing or a bad thing, this shatters the balance that Standard had. Standard was in its best state that it's ever been in. This is going to blow that up, if for no other reason that it's ratcheting up the power level so high. I think we might see a couple of degenerate things come out of this. I don't think it's going to be as diverse as it was. I think it's still going to be fairly healthy, but I think it's going to narrow a little bit. And I think that the stronger decks are going to coalesce more than they already were. There's going to be a little bit less variety, which I think is unfortunate. But at the same time, there is a lot of other fringe stuff that this does open up. So it's kind of hard to tell. But just if nothing else, like I said, the power level is going through the roof after this set.
It is. You're not wrong. And for your edification and or enjoyment, our first standard event, it looks like, will be SCG Richmond May 4th and 5th. So that'll be opening weekend.
So the weekend is legal. Yeah, so you're going to see all the brand new stuff. I mean, people... There's not a whole lot of resources out there to test this stuff, so I'm sure people have already been doing it, brewing.
And the fact, well, what I love about this though is the fact that it's SCG means we'll actually get to freaking watch it.
Shut up, you lie. There's no such thing as
it'll
coverage
actually
anymore.
Be broadcast as opposed to like here's our Twitter.
Yeah, like by the way, guys, there was 2 Grand Prix this weekend. Did you know about that? I didn't know about
no,
that. Well, actually, I did because we were thinking about going to that Grand Prix, but it was Legacy.
Right.
But yeah, all we heard was a tweet of the top 8. That was basically all coverage was just tweeting out the top 8 deck lists. Yep. Thanks.
Yeah, the next one is Magic Fest Madison. Limited Grand Prix is May 12th, 10th through 12th. Mm-hmm. Then Prominence has a team limited. Like, it's weird. It's like GPs are not happening until there's no standard GPs.
Yeah, it's interesting that they
standard, okay, Kansas, May 31st. So they're giving it like a couple of weeks to come in, but
yeah, so Star City Games is going to have a huge jump on the competition as far as that's concerned. Because also don't forget there's the SCG in Syracuse in the middle of May.
Yep, which is 2 weeks later.
Yep. Yeah. And I'll be going to that.
I know you are. And seriously, take your phone, your voice recorder. You've got the Anchor stuff, man. You can do mini episodes while you're there. I think that would be great.
I might be able to do in between rounds, just basically do updates on how I'm doing.
Yeah, because I'd love to see that.
If nothing else, I might tweet it. If I can't record it, I'll tweet it.
Yeah, I'll give you the Twitter handle. So
yeah.
But, you know, with that, I mean, so I combat's pretty much done. We're kind of in agreement that control is going to be a thing.
I think
aggro's not dead, but it's on life support.
I think we're in agreement that we're scared.
Yeah. I think aggro's going to be on life support for a while.
Well, aggro's actually a good thing to have out of the gates because the control decks usually have to develop the answers to the aggro decks. So I wouldn't actually be surprised if the first couple weekends you see mid-range and aggro sort of do nice things before, you know, control reasserts its dominance and crushes you all like the insignificant bugs that you are.
I think a Jeskai mid-range could happen. It'd be interesting.
There's so much out there.
Huh?
There's so much out there.
Feather alone is actually part of why I'm thinking that.
So much out there for control to destroy and crush.
Oh, God, you're such a... You know what? There could even be colorless with Ugin and Karn, and you know, we could even see the rise of artifacts. So
yeah, somebody I read somewhere somebody was doing some sort of a crazy artifact deck with Psy, Master Thopterist again. So
oh no shit!
People are brewing stuff. It's an infinite combo with
an infinite combo.
I don't know if it was. I think it might have been a Legacy or a Modern combo, but I think there's something in Standard too that goes berserk.
And he's
with
not
that.
In this, is he?
What's that?
Psy's not in this.
No, he's not a Planeswalker.
Oh, okay, I was. All right.
Yeah, he's just a legend.
All right, well, let's call an end to combat and go right back into...
Main Phase.
Okay, welcome to our second Main Phase. And again, we want to thank you guys. You guys have been really great about emailing us, podcast@planestalkerspodcast.com. And we do have an Ask Aramis from our buddy John.
Thank you,
so,
John.
So Liz from Oshkosh did not write in. I'm kind of sad, but, well, what are you going to do? All right, so John wrote in. He said, "Hey, guys!" Exclamation point. So more like, "Hey, guys!"
Oh, wow. Rip ears.
This week's question may or may not be on your radar already, and since I feel you both have different play styles, both of you can chime in.
Oh, he's picking up
well,
on that.
Well, thank you, John, for telling me how to do the show.
I'm sorry.
He is our number one fan, and I'm busting his balls. Some of the Magic pros have been all fired up on Twitter recently over the subject of maximum hand size. Do you think it would be good for the game to do away with the maximum hand size rule so that you no longer have to discard down to 7 at the end step? Aramis, I'm going to let you go. This is your bit, buddy.
So, as the control player, no, I don't think this is a good idea. I think that would actually be a very bad thing if they ever remove the maximum hand size, because as a control player, basically what that means is that once I've established control, I'm just going to start stockpiling answers. And if you thought you were locked out before, I have 10 counter spells in my hand now. Have fun. No, so I think they that is something like having five colors of magic. This is something they should never touch. I think it's off limits.
I'm in agreement with that. For similar reasons, but also different ones. First of all, and I'm coming at this from somebody who played in 1994. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a purist in some regards. And you know, when I hear people talk about, because they played Hearthstone and they're like, well, having to do mana and you can get screwed or flooded as opposed to just getting one mana per turn and blah blah blah. You know what? I'll try to find the beep button. I should write this down. Bullshit. I call bullshit. You want to play Hearthstone? Play Hearthstone.
Yeah.
Go to Hearthstone, play it, get your account, have fun.
It's a different
this
game.
Is Magic, and Mana Screw, Mana Flood has been a part of this game from day one, as has hand size. And so removing the hand size for me, taking that out, I don't like it. It changes the game far too much. Mm-hmm. I understand, like, I have no problem with them screwing with the mulligan rule, mostly because they've never really... The mulligan rules have always been somewhat fluid. It's a consistent trying to get it right. I mean, I remember when mulligans first started, and it was, you know, you couldn't mulligan unless you had a fistful of lands or a fistful of creatures. If you only had one land or one creature, that was the only time you could mulligan. Mm-hmm. And you had to show it, you know, and then it changed somewhere after I left to, you know, the Vancouver mulligan, which is what we have now, and then this weekend they're trying the London mulligan.
Well, along those same lines, too, when I came back to the game, they had removed Mana Burn.
Right.
And that
same
was something
idea.
That was something that had been in the game since it first started. And removing that, you know, fundamentally changed the way some cards worked. Because there's a card in, I believe, Cold Snap, where its cumulative upkeep is adding a red to your mana pool. So,
right.
You know, back in the day, that was a slow, painful death, or actually a relatively quick death, because that adds up really fast. But now it's basically an infinite mana engine, but it's only during your upkeep.
But
removing it didn't really change the game that much, because it wasn't really something that came up all that much. Because most people are just hardwired to spend all their mana and not leave it sitting in their pool for a phase to end and then for it to go away. And then, oh, whoops, I took 6 damage.
And with that, too, I mean, I was there. I was playing when they moved from instance and interrupts to just instance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm not, and I'm okay with that. I mean, again, I'm a purist in run regard, but not to the point where it impacts the legality and fairness of the game, but I don't think the hand size does that.
Yeah, we're both
We're
both pre-stack players.
Right.
I remember batches when you cast an interrupt and nothing else could stop an interrupt except another interrupt.
Right.
Boy, was that fun. Not really.
But I mean, the point is, it's like it doing away with maximum hand size completely changes the game to an extent where everything can go. It can go bonkers. There are enough cards in standard. Now again, we're a standard podcast by casual, so I mean, I'm speaking, you know, generally and not specifically. But there are enough cards, not only in this set, War of the Spark, but in standard as a whole right now. I think there's one or two that say you have no maximum hand size.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't want a maximum hand size, you can play those cards, and their cost is rather high, and it's usually two or three color, which means you have to get really the right mana base to make. You have to thread a needle to get there.
Yeah,
which tells me that Wizards thinks that this rule of maximum hand size is very important to keeping the integrity of the game alive, while, you know, giving you the ability to do away with it for a very high cost. You know, is kind, so they know that it's necessary to have, but they also understand that there are some people that would love to have the opportunity to have that.
Well, and think about this too. You go to like Legacy and Vintage and other formats like that. You don't need Ancestral Recall to be any more powerful than it already is.
Yeah, fuck.
You know, even in Standard, you know, obviously Finale of Revelation has that clause: if you spend 10 or more mana, you have no maximum hand size. But being able to do it for 5. When you already have a full grip and going up to 12 cards and then not having to discard, because if they got rid of that rule, again, as a control player, I think that's a terrible idea. So I hope that the Twitterverse was just going off on somebody saying, hey, wouldn't this be a good idea? And the collective Magic universe saying, no, shut up.
Actually, I think it was the other way around. I think there were some people calling for it.
Well, they no. That needs to go away.
I would like to see... John, next time, send us the names of who they are. Like, send me some tweets on that. I want to see who they are.
So we can send
I don't imagine a Reed Duke. I mean, watch, Reed Duke will probably be the biggest one. But I can't imagine somebody like a Reed Duke or an Autumn, you know, that they going out there and saying, like, we need to do away with maximum hand size, especially Reed Duke. He does seem kind of like us, like a purist. Like, he's like, hey, I want to keep the integrity alive. Mm-hmm. You know, and this would change Magic on a fundamental level.
Yeah.
So, I mean, for me, I'm against it. John, I mean, really, thank you for writing in. I hope you know I'm not trying to slam you. But, I mean, for me personally, I'm against anything like that. I mean, it would be, like I said, taking away... you know, mana, like and doing Hearthstone and being like, here you go, you get one mana a turn. No, I want to be able to ramp. I want to be able to. It's a part of it.
Well, I mean,
and you know, getting a hand full of land and flooding out and drawing land 7 or 8 turns in a row, and my God, it happened Friday, and there's nothing more annoying. But you sit there, and if you've played this game long enough and you've been involved in this game long enough, you're going to sit there, and even when you're getting flooded, while it's frustrating, there's a part of you that goes, it's Magic.
Mm-hmm. And you think about this too. It would break cards that have been fixed. Like, it would re-break Psychotog. It would break again, Necropotence, Yawgmoth's Bargain, all these cards that let you draw cards for a price with no real limit. I mean, it's just, or even cards like, you know, Wild Mongrel, cards that make you discard cards for an effect, Seismic Assault, or just like Land Tax. I mean, holy crap. There's always that game when someone plays a turn one Land Tax where, okay, the proper play is sometimes to just draw your card and pass.
Yep.
And then now just being able to sit there, draw cards. Who wants to be the first one to blink and play a land? Well, I got 27 cards in my hand. You go ahead.
I think we're all kind of in agreement on there, John. Yeah. And next, you know, feel free to write us back, John, and let us know your thoughts on it. I would really love to, you know, have that talk with you and debate as well. But with that, I think, you know, I think it's time for us to start picking up our table here.
Heads up.
Okay, so, you know, we're going to pick up our cards, put them in the boxes. Again, I want to remind everybody, we will be broadcasting again live this Saturday, starting at probably around 2 p.m. Eastern time. So that's 1 p.m. Central, noon Mountain, you know, unless you're living
in...
Yeah, at 11 a.m. Pacific. Unless you're living in Arizona, then it's still 11 a.m. Pacific. That's where my daddy lives in Arizona. So, but we're going to be live from Kerwin's. We're going to have, you know, webcams and our microphones. We're just going to be doing a full-blown live podcast. So we'd very much love to have you guys tune in,
kids
interact with the show.
Kids seats are still just $5.
Huh?
Kids seats are still just $5. The old Monster Jam reference.
Yeah. I would love to see you guys. Like, let us know you're out there. Interact with us. Send us some emails. We'll even do Ask Aramis right there. But, you know, you can reach us, you know, same place as you always can. Both Aramis and I do stream Arena occasionally. Not as much as either one of us would like. But we tend to do it on the Planestalkers podcast channel on Twitch. So what you do is go to Twitch, look up Planestalkers podcast. We'll stream, you know, our own personal ones. Like mine is Mindcrime 73, but it does rebroadcast there to Planestalkers. So check me out on Twitch, Mindcrime 73.
Yep, like he was saying, I'm also on Twitch. And when I stream, it goes on my channel, and it also simultaneously streams on the Planestalkers channel. Luckily, we've never been streaming at the same time, so I don't know how or if that would work, but whatever. So when I am on Twitch, I am at RMECWRX. If you'd rather, you know, reach out to us via Twitter, Benson will probably be the one answering you because I don't have a Twitter account.
Well, we have to get you set up on this so that you can while you're at
the Twitter for our podcast is at PlainstalkerPod on Twitter. So, you know, fire us a tweet if you got a question or a comment. Just let us know how you're doing. Let us know you're having fun playing the game.
Yes, absolutely. My personal Twitter is at WRBenson. And, of course, you can always follow us on Facebook. Just look up Planestalker, and you can like and follow our page and share it out. And, you know, if you're watching our live stream right now, you know, you already found us.
And if you don't want to be all public and you want to be super secretive and you want to send us an email instead of, you know, Twitter or commenting on Twitch or Facebook or any of that stuff, you can send us an email. You can ask us for advice on our Ask Aramis section. I'll offer you tips on anything Magic related, you know, rules questions, deck construction, limited choices, you know, how many times Benson had to intentionally draw against somebody playing Teemer or is it or anything else.
Shut up.
So if you do want to send us an email, our address is podcast@planestalkerpodcast.com.
And finally, folks, beyond that, feel free. We haven't gotten one this week. We haven't had one in a few weeks. But if you go on to iTunes, if you use iTunes, listen to the podcast, we'd love you to put up an iTunes review there. It actually will make the show a lot more visible. You can find us on iTunes or anywhere else you can download the podcast. Stitcher, Google Play, various other podcast, wherever you can find a podcast, hopefully you'll find this show. But you can definitely go on to iOS there and Apple iTunes and put in a review, especially if it's positive, and we'll read it on the show, and it would really help the show. But for all that, I want to thank you guys very much for listening this week. This has been the Planestalkers Podcast. We will be back Saturday, like we said, doing a live broadcast from Kerwin's for the pre-release. So for Aramis Perez, this is William Benson saying, remember to always leave at least some of your lands untapped. Have yourself a great week, and we'll see you Saturday. Take care.